Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. At SFO, you can discover award-winning flavors and unique shops all before takeoff. Learn more about what's at SFO at flysfo.com.
Hey, it's Avery Trufelman, host of Articles of Interest. And I've got to say, I've been a fan of KQED ever since I was a little kid, and I would come out to San Francisco to visit my grandma. It was just what we'd always turn on every time we got in the car, every time we were making dinner and turning on the radio. It was always KQED. And then over the years, I've become a massive fan of KQED podcasts because this is local reporting at its best. These are answers to questions you've always wanted to know, interviews with exciting, unusual voices, necessary journalism, all told with love and care and artistry. And did you know that a majority of KQED's funding actually comes from members? It's just people like you and me supporting the programs they love, while also getting access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. If you want to sign up and be a part of this amazing community, visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to become a member today. That's podcasts with an S. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your support.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Alexis Madrigal. Have you ever walked by an urban garden that seems to pulsate with life? Plants and pollinators sharing space perfectly with the humans who tend them. It's no surprise that this kind of space does not just happen, at least not season after season. It takes planning. And a new book by Bay Area landscape and garden expert Leslie Bennett and her co-author Julie Chai could just help you figure out how to honor our climate and your own personal culture. Join us this morning to talk with Bennett and Chai, along with nursery owner Flora Grubb, about building your own garden wonderland. That's all coming up next, right after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. I find the Bay Area such a fascinating horticultural space. People will spend like $2 million on a home, and all the land surrounding it will be filled with a few junky plants from the Home Depot down the road. Meanwhile, people in group houses figure out ways to have these thriving farms, basically, while they're still renting and constantly wondering if they'll get evicted. All this to say, designing and maintaining a beautiful space doesn't require owning your home or tons of money, though as with most things, some disposable time and income help. Our particular climate and its changing baselines require some thought. And the somewhat cramped conditions most of us find ourselves in require particular strategies, too. So we're delighted this morning to be joined by experts in the kind of gardens that are meant for life to thrive in, plants and humans alike. We're joined by Leslie Bennett and Julie Chai, co-authors of the new book, Garden Wonderland, Create Life-Changing Outdoor Spaces for Beauty, Harvest, Meaning, and Joy. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
So, Leslie Bennett, there is a specific definition in this book for what a garden wonderland is, right? So, like, what is it to you?
A garden wonderland. I've been working on this because it's so many things. But at its heart, it is a garden that supports people to live better lives, hence the life-changing subtitle.
And how do you see that different from the way that gardens are normally conceptualized?
Well, I think a lot of gardens just are created without a whole lot of intent, so they just end up being yards with stuff in them that you have to take care of and sometimes feel kind of bad about because you're not connected to it. And I feel like there are a lot of feelings that go along with yards that haven't been designed to support people.
Yeah.
And then I think there's so many different branches of like people who are like, well, we only can support the wildlife, or we have to only do natives, or we have to only do low water. And I feel like all of those, they remind me of sort of the problems of the environmental movement, where they forgot the people, erased the people. Yeah. And in fact, I believe really strongly that humans are at the center of gardens. They're also at the center of the environmental movement. And so I very intentionally place people at the center of the garden, and I think that's the difference.
Well, and before you were a garden designer and landscape designer, I mean, you worked in the environmental movement, right? I mean, environmental justice, you got a law degree. So this stuff is like kind of The theoretical aspects of this are also like close to at hand for you.
Yeah, very much. I spent 27 years being a deep academic in environmental justice, land use theory, and really came. My focus ended up being around land use and cultural and property preservation. You know, how does the landscape and how it looks affect our personal and collective psyches? And I really felt that growing up here in California, surrounded by this beauty. I grew up in Palo Alto, the beautiful foothills and the golden hills, the ability to hike, the ability to have nature and like beautiful protected land, because it is, it's protected. It's,
right.
It's a result of policy. Yeah. I felt a huge connection to the land growing up. And I have always just thought that's so important, like where you grow up and how you feel connected to the land and how you carry that through you, with you, through your life.
Yeah. Julie, you have in this book this kind of checklist of questions to ask yourself about building a garden. And I kind of love, I'm just going to walk you through them a little bit. You know, the first one starts like kind of how you would expect a garden book, right? You know, what annuals do you want to harvest and where will they go? So that would be answering things like, do you want to plant tomatoes? Or like what kind of flowers, right?
Yes.
Then we kind of get into these ones that are more complicated, like where will you be and what will you be doing? Like what's the intent of that question?
I think a big part of what we're trying to do in the book is, you know, explain ways that you can create your space for you to get the most out of it and for you to really have places where you want to dine, where you want to relax by yourself, where you might want to do different activities that are very specific to you and whoever else is in your household and whoever else you plan to share the garden with.
Yeah. The third question, what do you want to see and how do you want your garden to feel? Like what kind of answers do you get from that when you talk with, you know, clients of yours doing garden design?
Yeah. And I mean, these are questions we ask literally. I mean, I do hundreds of client consults a year. And we do go through all these questions. And the question about look and feel is interesting. A lot of people have a clear idea. They're like, I want to be in a meadow. I want it to be super natural and relaxing and feel the breeze whispering through the grasses. Or others are like, I want to feel like I'm on vacation. Like, I love Hawaii and I just want my backyard to feel like that. Or I just want it to like look super cool and modern and hip because I'm a young person and I want to have cool parties back here. Right. So there's like any, and they're all legit.
I mean, no judgment.
Like, awesome. Let's do it. Right. You know? Yeah. And let's make it really, I think a garden is like your living room and I love making it, I love making design more accessible. I always talk about like the IKEA revolution. I think it's so cool that design has gone to the hands of the people and you can, I mean, this was 20 years ago IKEA became popular, but you could go get cool stuff that reflected your style for an affordable price.
Yeah.
And, you know, plants are pretty affordable. You can choose cool stuff and make a garden that really reflects your style and that is an outward expression of you.
Also, like, even in the phrasing of that question, though, I mean, not how do you want it to look, but what do you want to see?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like to me, that feels like a kind of a different way of thinking about that. Right. It's like, what do I want my experience of this to be rather than thinking about an English garden or something where you're like, it must look like this because these are the rules of gardens.
Yeah.
The fourth question here, final question. And I love this one. You're asking about a garden. What matters to you and how can you make your garden meaningful? And one of the things I love about this is in the book, you have all these examples. Do you have any favorite examples? Maybe I'll just read some.
Should I read some?
Okay, I'll read a few. I mean, I love
favorites.
It. You know,
Our own are in there.
I grew up with blackberry foraging. I'd like to have that taste and feeling up close again. You know, we love to cook traditional Chinese food and often can't find the special vegetable ingredients easily. I want to take this formal European-inspired garden and make it a black space with flowers and my favorite colors and foods from black diaspora cuisines. I want to make it a place where I know deep down that I belong. I mean, this is kind of going right to the heart of people's identities, right? And you're kind of baking it into their gardens.
Yeah, that's actually a huge part of the book, is really finding ways to make yourself feel connected to the plants and to the landscape and for everybody else who's in it, and mostly yourself. You know, I think a big part of surrounding yourself with plants that mean something to you or a look that means something to you is, you know, something that's really nurturing and really nourishing so that when you go back out into the world, you feel restored and refreshed and you're better when you're out there.
Yeah. We're talking about creating garden wonderlands with co-authors of this new book, Garden Wonderland, Create Life-Changing Outdoor Spaces for Beauty, Harvest, Meaning, and Joy. It's Leslie Bennett and Julie Chai here with me in the studio. I'd love to hear from you, you know, just answering this question. I mean, how is your garden meaningful to you? Like, why is your garden meaningful to you? You can email us forum@kqed.org. You can find us on all of our social channels, or you can give us a call, of course. The number is 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Leslie, why don't you give us an example from the book of someone who's kind of created one of these meaningful gardens? I mean, for me, I wanted to hear about Frederica Newton of the Huey Newton Foundation. And like, how did she conceptualize her garden and how'd you execute it?
Sure. Yeah. She working with Frederica was the honor of my lifetime and the joy. She's the most wonderful, lovely person ever. And her garden reflects her amazingness. It is a truly amazing garden. And it was really interesting to, as with all clients, you know, asking this question about what matters to you and trying to go deep. You know, usually we've just met the people. So we're like, hi, let's go to the heart of it. What matters to you? And it can be uncomfortable. And we sometimes have to unravel it a little bit and or give people time and space to kind of brew on it. But for Frederica, she really was seeking peace and serenity. Her work is complex and just takes a lot of her energy. So she was seeking a peaceful backyard retreat. And then when we sort of teased out what that was, you know, I love that she talked about her father who grew fruits and vegetables and I think had an agricultural degree. And so was in their backyard growing fruits and veggies, had an apple tree. And so the apple tree that she had in her yard, which wasn't in the best shape, but we fixed it up a little. That was a super meaningful tree that we actually worked around and highlighted. Mm. And then her mother had roses and adored roses. And Frederica had really fond memories of that. Mm. So we included several really special roses so that Frederica can also grow roses and think of her mother, remember her mother. And, you know, Frederica is also a grandmother. And so a lot of it was thinking about her grandkids who spend a lot of time with her, making space for them to experience those same plants that are so meaningful in the family and have space to play and relax.
It's so interesting because I think one of the most difficult things, at least for me as a gardener, has been the difference between the vision of thinking like, oh, I want this, and then trying to like plan in four dimensions, right? That this plant is going to grow in time. I'm going to need to maintain it. Like, what's it going to look like now versus like in a few years? How do you go about sort of presenting that vision to people? Like, here's what it's going to look like when it goes in, and here's how it's going to come in over the years.
There's a lot of just trust us. It's gonna be great. I mean, because it is, it's a little bit like that. It's like, it is so complex. It's so layered. And
they're living things, right? They're going to do what they're going to do.
Absolutely. And I feel like I don't even hold it all. Like sometimes, you know, I have a whole team. Like I don't create any of these gardens on my own. And a team of everybody's got different specialties. We have florists, landscape architect, farmers, stonemasons. And sometimes I'm not even quite sure how one aspect of it is going to look. But I'm just like, oh, she's got that. Like, that's going to be awesome. I know this part. And I feel like some of it is just like artistry and faith. And then some of it is, you know, explaining, you know, this little salvia, which is 3 inches tall right now, is going to grow out to be a 3 to 4 foot shrub. It's going to be pretty evergreen. We're going to cut it back once a year, but it's going to fill the space and it's going to be really vibrant.
And it also feels like there's really a kind of time-money trade-off with a lot of plants, right? You can almost always find a bigger plant, but it's going to cost like 10 times as much as like the little tiny version.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And my recommendation is on that is, you know, you can always go small with a lot of things, but with fruit trees, I always say just go get the 15-gallon, like get the joy, get the fruit tree that first year. You don't want to wait 7 years. And anything else that matters to you, if you're super into Protea, like get the awesome Protea.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they grow quickly too, but you know, it's okay to invest in the things that make you happy. Yeah. And that's a big part of my message too.
We're talking about Garden Wonderland here at the, you know, really kind of the center of spring here in the Bay Area. We're joined by Leslie Bennett, owner and creative director of Pine House Edible Gardens, co-author of the book Garden Wonderland. We're also joined by Julie Chai, her co-author. She's also the editor of Discovering dahlias. They're going to answer some of your garden queries as well. You know, if you have questions about things that are happening out there, you can email us form@kqed.org, or again, you can give us a call 866-733-6786. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for more right after the break.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about Garden Wonderland, you know, kind of creating your version of a meaningful outdoor space, joined by the co-authors of the book Garden Wonderland, Leslie Bennett and Julie Chai. And we want to bring on another guest, one of our garden experts, Flora Grubb, co-owner of Flora Grubb Gardens in San Francisco and Los Angeles, as well as the Grubb and Nadler Nurseries. Welcome, Flora.
Good morning.
So, Flora, as someone who sees different, you know, garden design people, you know, coming through and buying plants, how would you describe the sort of the style, the Garden Wonderland style? Like, what do you think is kind of its trademark?
Well, what I love about the gardens that Leslie is designing is that they have everything while holding a very strong vision. So these gardens look beautiful. It's not like you look at them and think, oh gosh, what a mess.
Yeah. That's my garden. Yeah.
And yet it's a combination of ornamentals and edibles and places to be, and the plantsmanship is eclectic and exciting. Yeah. So that's why it's part of why I love what Leslie's doing so much.
Leslie, do you feel like you have a particular plant where you're like, ah, this is my, you see that and it's like, you're like, I wonder if that's a Leslie Bennett garden. Do you have one?
Ooh.
Or a particular thing?
Not really. I mean, I think our trademark is just like lots of plants. So, I mean, if I had to pick one that I'm loving right now, yeah, I would say it's a grevillea. It's like, I'm just in love with grevillea.
What does that look like? Describe that for people.
Oh, it's this feathery Australian low water Mediterranean adapted plant. Yeah. I think from Australia, right, Flora? Or South Africa?
Yes.
From somewhere like that. It's gorgeous. We just picked up a Grevillea Misty Pink from Flora Grubb Nursery earlier this week.
It's so pretty.
Most gorgeous thing you've ever seen. It's got like frosty, kind of silvery, feathery leaves, this like really subtle, soft pink bloom. It's like super sophisticated, but super girly, super awesome. Just love it.
Can I answer that question?
Yes.
Okay, when I see a garden and think, that must be one of the Pet Leslie's gardens, it's because she's mixed those beautiful plants that she loves in with the edibles and annuals. So those big foundational plants that make a garden look good all the time, and then these exciting little pops of color that come and go, and then the edible component is almost always there to some degree, which I think is one of the ways of connecting people to their gardens that makes them really happy.
Yep.
Julie, I love that you call those plants in the book hardworking plants.
yes, they are, because they really serve a lot of functions. They look good all year. They're really giving you a framework. And I would add that one of Pine House characteristics for their gardens is that they really use a lot of bold foliage. Mm. Leslie does love very full gardens. You know,
I do.
She likes a lot of plants. And the characteristic for me is big leaves, lots of colors of foliage that you wouldn't necessarily think of.
Huh, like what are you talking about? Like what?
Leucodendron.
Yeah, leucodendron. Sorry, that's one of my favorites out there.
Ligularia. Ebony. Yeah, Ligularia that I think has gotten renamed as Farfugium. Yep. Lots of big ferns, There's Heuchera, there's Phormium.
Yep.
Yeah, cool. A lot of big leaves.
Let's start bringing in some callers who are excited. Sam in Fremont, welcome.
Good morning. I'm really enjoying this conversation because for many years in my current house, I stuck to a very formal rose garden. And a couple of years ago, maybe 5-6 years ago, I began, after looking at a couple of friends who, one is an English woman, started to just put in what I loved. And I have a riot of color throughout my garden now. And its foundation is still roses. One thing that I do differently, I don't like planting food, so I have a separate kitchen garden that a friend tends. And I also don't like annuals, but I have found so many perennials that are just so beautiful. A Lenten rose and salvias, there must be thousands of them, are just there all the time. And the one thing I'd like to say to callers is that, yes, it'd be lovely to be able to hire a landscape architect, but if you think about the three items you talked about earlier, what brings you joy, you can make the most amazing garden. Yeah. And I thank you for this show.
Hey, thank you so much, Sam. I love that those things where someone starts out with a base, you know, maybe there's something they bought the house and it looks like that. Or they did want a formal rose garden like maybe Sam did. And then you can see that it starts to like mutate and it becomes like not feral, because that implies, I think, kind of an out of controlness, but it just starts to turn into something like more personal to that person. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll add, I love that so much because so much of our message is around joy. And then sort of the design perspective in me is like, great, we have got the roses, we've got all the like items that we love. And what I see in a lot of clients who come to me with like that garden that's just been described is we've got a lot of fine leaf textures on top of each other. And we've got a lot of deciduous material like roses and salvias that are gone in the winter. And I'm a really firm believer that we're in California. There's no reason your garden shouldn't look amazing all the time. So my one piece of advice, you know, when that listener or anybody is ready for it, is just to add in some evergreen shrubs. And there are so many amazing evergreen shrubs, whether it's something more simple like a pittosporum or something more exciting like a leucodendron or something in the protea family. And then you can add those in, and then you've got what I call like a backbone or an anchor to the space that just elevates it and makes it look great all year and gives it all that texture, foliage texture contrast.
I feel like I've been noticing a ton of what I think people sometimes call the cousin it plant.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like low-growing acacias, but I think it's for that reason, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe you all are like, oh, very uncool plant. I don't
it's
know.
It's great.
Okay,
great.
Yeah. But it's, Flora's like,
No, it's all over my garden.
Yeah. Okay, okay.
It's fantastic.
I think it was the first scene at Flora's.
Yes, yeah.
For the texture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Entirely for the texture.
And the evergreen.
And for the evergreen, evergreen texture, right?
Because they do, they're just kind of like, I don't know, wispy, is that the right way to describe it? You know, kind of hair. I mean, people call it the cousin it because it kind of feels like hair, something so soft and,
Yeah, if people want to look it up, you're talking about acacia cousin
it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, acacia cousin it, exactly. Let's bring in Janet in Berkeley. Welcome, Janet.
Hi, thank you. I guess I love this show, and I know Frederica personally, and I need to see her garden. But I think one of the questions that I, I think the question that I have is I'm planning to retire soon, so I'm really wanting to look at a low maintenance yard, and I want something in my front yard. I have a lot of grass, which I think just sucks up water, and I'd like to do something low maintenance there. And the thing that's been baffling to me is. And I'm not good. Plants die with me. They don't have a very. I'm horrible with plants. I just need to say that. I confess to that. But I love the feeling of being in the garden. In my backyard, I'd love for it to be New Orleans meets Zen because I meditate. And I've got grass back there, and I've got two palm trees, and I've got stone that needs to come up. But I don't have $30,000 for a landscaper to come in and design it, and I'm just not sure where to start. Because I'd like some greenery back there, but I'd love to have places where I can have friends sit around, meditate, and then just take in a space for a lovely dinner. And I don't know where to start with it because it's daunting for me.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we offer at Flora Grub Gardens in San Francisco is a service where you can bring in pictures of your garden and the Incredibly skilled people working on our sales floor are going to help you design something yourself with our help so you don't make too many mistakes.
Oh.
So take a bunch of photos and bring them in, and we'll help you. Because you're right, a designer is an investment that you should make if you can afford it. And then you take over and you become the chief gardener of your own garden. But it is a big investment.
But Leslie, you know, the other thing that I was thinking, just listening to Janet and kind of listening
to the name
way,
of your place again?
Oh, it's called Flora Grub.
Flora Grub Gardens in San Francisco.
You know, it kind of sounds like you could kind of start in one spot. Right. Mm-hmm. If what you want is like sanctuary and you want New Orleans Zen, right, you could just start one spot. What is the thing that would make me feel New Orleans Zen? So let's just do that. Like, what if we just had to build out a spot for a yoga mat and some plants? What would you do, Leslie?
Sure. Well, and I also have to just say another great tool for this will be the actual book, Garden Wonderland, which Frederica's garden, you mentioned references for that. One of her references was also New Orleans and sort of a southern feel, sort of that warm, balmy climate that is part of her family's legacy or heritage. And so you can look at the story in the book as well and find some inspiration there. But, you know, really with that, and, you know, we did this, we thought, okay, what does bring that feel? And we turn to southern magnolias, thinking about those trees. You know, a lot of people think of the huge, giant southern magnolias, which are not appropriate for a small urban or suburban backyard usually. But there's awesome little dwarf ones. So many different teddy bear. What is the other one? Little gem. Yeah, and I think we used a bunch of those in Frederica's backyard to kind of evoke that sort of that particular feeling. Another look that I love just for that New Orleans thing is one of the designers on our team, Holly Kulgian, she took a trip of Charleston Gardens. And we saw there that they have the look is oak trees with magnolias and palms, like palmate palms, which is such a, here in California, that feels really weird. And even for me, I was like, wait, palm trees and oaks? Like, that's so weird. And then I was like, I love it. That's so weird. But, you know, it's not weird. It actually grows totally naturally there. And you can bring that look. So, I mean, starting with a corner, like, pick like those three plants. It's a wonderful contrast of textures. They are all available at Flora Grub, just saying. Yeah. Most amazing palm collection. But really, it's that palmate palm, not the sort of like SoCal coconut palm. But anyways, so just a couple plants really evoke a feeling. And then from there, you can just fill it in. It's okay.
I just need a puttering path. And once I'm on the puttering path going out to look at some part of the yard, then I notice all the little things as you're kind of going along. Let's bring in Kathleen in Novato. Welcome, Kathleen.
Hi. I just wanted to say thank you so much for having a program about gardening. I'm neither a good gardener nor a great gardener. I just love the dirt. So my father was a master gardener. He had several community gardens in the Northwest. And my mother loves flowers, and so I always plant fuchsias. And my fuchsias actually overwintered and bloomed again, so I'm real happy about that. And I wanted to know two things. What do I plant to keep deer, wild turkeys, and jackrabbits from eating? And how do I plant, I heard that wildflowers and I don't know what else will help attract pollinators. So I want to attract pollinators and keep the critters that munch away.
Sure. Flora Grub. Hey, thank you, Kathleen. Really appreciate it.
A hungry deer will eat anything, but as a rule of thumb, Australian plants tend to not be as popular with deer, and also a lot of Australian plants have big, beautiful pollinator-attracting flowers. So that would be a fun direction for you to try.
Yeah.
Can you share which are your favorite?
Oh, well, grevilleas are a really fun option. They have big, beautiful flowers and evergreen foliage and tend to be ear delicious to wildlife, to eat wildlife eating them, but attract all the bees and butterflies that you want.
And for those kind of trying to picture a grevillea, it's kind of one of those alien looking flowers, right?
It really is.
You know, it's just like a bunch of butterfly tongues, you know, pink butterfly tongues coming out everywhere.
Yeah, something like that. Or sometimes sometimes people say it evokes like the look of a shrimp or something like that. Like
yeah,
the
a little underwater.
Very, very beautiful shrimp.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
beautiful
yeah.
shrimp.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I've always thought shrimps were beautiful. Yeah. And what do you, you know, there, we have had shows, you know, full shows that are about, you know, native and non-native plants and how to think about that. It feels like a lot of the thinking is kind of evolving maybe towards something that's climate adapted rather than just native.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we share a climate with about 3% of the world, as I understand it, that are summer dry climates. And we were actually talking about this a bit before we went on. These are plants that need little, if no, summer water and enjoy the winter rains. And there are lots of plants from all over the world that do really well here in our same type of region.
Mm-hmm. You know, Flora, it's interesting too, though, right? Because there's the inner bay, which is going to have fog and be pretty cold during the summertime. And then there's like Napa, which is going to be hot, or Sonoma or something.
That's right. So that's the summer cool Mediterranean climate and the summer hot Mediterranean climate. And what we can grow is slightly different. You certainly know that if you've been to coastal California and then drove inland. It's really different. Right. 30 minutes inland is much hotter and significantly colder than what we see right here by the bay.
Yeah. Let's bring in Bill in Santa Rosa. Welcome, Bill.
Hi, thank you. I love the show. It's very timely as our backyards are starting to bloom and look lovely again. I live up here in the very warm, like a, you know, Tuscan environment.
It's a nice way to think of it.
I bought a home up here with just a blank slate, cement, and a lawn, and I took it out and tried to turn it into like a winery environment with crushed granite. And then I like to walk out and see flowers, and so I put in a lot of lavender, rosemary, clematis, and cosmos, and wildflowers. And I also like to wander about and snack, so there's lots of fruit in the back.
Yeah.
Lots of blueberries, raspberries, guavas, figs, and citrus. And one of the neatest things for me is to come out and wake up and snack right off my backyard. And it's a beautiful, relaxing environment.
Ah, I love
that,
Bill.
It was a nice transformation.
Yeah. It sounds like Bill went about it kind of thinking of it in the same way that you do in this book, kind of like, what do I want? And then to the plants. I wanted to pick out one individual thing from that, which is just about the herbs, and the use of herbs in this book is really interesting. You use it both like as the plant itself, like for foliage, but then you're also, of course, opening up the kind of food and medicinal aspect of it.
And the floral aspect.
Mm-hmm. And the floral aspect. Yeah,
all
yeah, right, exactly.
Go to flower.
Yeah.
So,
and
yeah.
the pollinators that just go nuts for the herbs when they bloom.
Exactly. These are the hardworking plants.
That's right.
The ones that have multifunction.
Right, a wall of rosemary, right? You're like, man, look at all those bees. It is just always wild.
And it's evergreen. I mean, rosemary is such a great example because it's evergreen. So we often put those, I love thinking about how you can enjoy the plant most, because like, it's good to just have it so you can cook from it, right? But it's also a wonderful landscape plant because it's evergreen. It flowers with these really pretty bright blue flowers in the winter. So I love to place that somewhere where, from when I'm inside my house, because I'm not in my garden so much in the winter, like my kitchen window, if I'm looking out my window and I can see in the winter some blooms, so that rosemary. And then again, it's attracting the pollen. It's just doing so much work for you.
Yeah.
I think that's a great example of being just super intentional. Like, you want a rosemary, great. How to situate so it gives you maximum joy, right? Because if it is flowering in January, February, but you're not in your yard and it's like on the house side, like you're not going to see it. You'll miss it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So anyway, just being really careful with that. And then I love that the caller just named like the sensory experience, because that's so much of this book is really creating opportunities for sensory experience in your garden, that walking through, the seeing the blooms, the feeling feeling the crunch of the gravel underfoot, grabbing the fruit and tasting it. All of those things, I think, really sort of bring a garden home, and sort of you can you're embodying. It's like an embodied experience.
Right. Yeah,
like,
that's right.
I am one with my garden, and I've, you know, and that's what
and
we
therefore
want.
The
you're
world.
A better person that
yes.
way,
you know?
Yes. Totally. Yeah, yeah. Rosemary, too, is a great beginner herb.
Yeah. Yes.
And another really good beginner herb, and especially if you don't, if you're not walking across gravel and in your orchard, but you instead you have like a little balcony, mm-hmm. is mint.
Oh my God. Yeah, you can't stop it from growing,
right?
Basically.
Yeah, totally. And you can grow it in a little pot. Yeah.
Always grow it in a pot.
Yes.
Yes. We're talking about garden wonderlands, how to create verdant, lush garden spaces in which, you know, you find your place of restoration. We're joined by Leslie Bennett, co-owner and creative director of Pine House Edible Gardens and co-author of Garden Wonderland, along with Julie Chai, who also joins us this morning. We also have Flora Grubb, co-owner of Flora Grubb Gardens in San Francisco and LA, and Grubb and Needler Nurseries. We're also taking your questions. I mean, it is spring. Everything is growing. But, you know, summer's coming. So email us forum@kqed.org. Give us a call, 866-733-6786. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about your spring gardening, how to create a garden wonderland for yourself. We have the co-authors of the book, Garden Wonderland, Create Life-Changing Outdoor Spaces for Beauty, Harvest, Meaning, and Joy. That's Leslie Bennett and Julie Chai. And we also have, of course, Flora Grubb of Flora Grubb Gardens here with us. One of the things that I have been noticing, Flora, and I'm noticing it in my own yard in particular, a lot of the succulents bloomed this year. I mean, obviously every year it happens sometimes. But I had a saucer aeonium, which is like, was kind of the size. I mean, no one out in Radioland can see this, but it's like much bigger than my head, right? This is like the size of my torso. It's one of these kind of flat green succulents. It looks like a kind of a sunburst. And now it's flowered. And now it's falling over. So what happens, like, when your aeonium or that kind of plant, so well adapted to this region, like, what happens if it's...
So some succulents, and not all of them, when each individual rosette blooms, mm-hmm. which is what your aeonium did, it went from looking like a big dinner plate,
yes.
starburst, to then a big yellow... plume came out, yes. right? It was covered
it's
in flowers.
It's like 6 feet long.
And it took a long time, and mm-hmm. the bees went nuts for that flower. And then that individual rosette is going to die. And hopefully there will be more little rosettes along the stem of the aeonium, and those are going to go through that same life cycle. Oh. So with a lot of plants that do that thing where they die when they bloom, mm-hmm. there's going to be more that come along. So yeah. agaves are like that, like the so-called century plant mm-hmm. that will get a giant flower after many years, not really a century. then that individual is going to die, but then there's going to be little babies all
yeah.
around the
and there are. There's other ones that are there. Mm-hmm. I'm just so sad because we bought this particular plant from like an old hippie who had left it in North Berkeley, left it sitting there for like 20 years. So it was just so huge and so beautiful. And now I'm going to have a moment for my, I mean, that has
the
been such a part
of, life.
Of I know.
Writ large in your garden.
Yes, yeah. Right.
Part of
your
journey.
Yes, exactly. We have a ton of comments coming in. So let me get to a couple of them here and we'll go back to the phone lines. One listener writes, tending to my small garden plot lent to me by the city of San Francisco is what got me through the time of my father's illness and passing. Gardening gave me a safe place to process thoughts and feelings in the great outdoors and to tend to other living things, brought me some level of joy in a difficult time. That's beautiful. Julie writes, I have a small breezeway living wall in my place in San Francisco, and it is truly my happy place. But I just got word that after 3 years on a waiting list, I have a plot at a community garden. I cannot tell you how excited I am to grow tomatoes and dahlias and have my hands in the dirt. One thing I wanted to ask our co-authors here, in this book, you have like a amazing little checklist of like, do you want to start a vegetable garden? Here, acquire these things one way or another. So for someone who's, you know, either they're planting their first, you know, planter bed, they're going to go to the nursery this weekend, or somebody who's just had this plot open up in a community garden, like how would you work out? Like, what's the first thing you'd plant? Then like 2 and 3 and like 4 and 5, like what would you do?
I would say the first thing you want to plant is what you want to eat.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people go out to the nursery when they're just getting started. They're really excited and they see everything and they buy everything, and it can be a little bit overwhelming. So I think you'll have the most, you know, traction with keeping your maintenance on schedule and going back tend to those plants if you plant something that you actually enjoy eating.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say tomato.
Yeah.
I think most, you know,
that's
just like a little cherry tomato, right?
The
and then you're going to kind of like... Maybe the little mini cucumbers. Like.
Yes.
And that's such a great place for everyone except for San Franciscans, where it's not a great
place. Sorry, it's my East Bay showing.
It is. And every day at the nursery, people come in and they're like, I want to start gardening. I want to start with tomatoes and basil. And we're like, ooh, how about starting with mint and rosemary? Because tomatoes and basil are just not happy in our fog.
Yeah. It's true. It's true. Maybe a cherry tomato.
A cherry tomato.
If you're going to try it.
If you're going to try it, try a Sun Gold.
Try a Sun Gold. And I feel like the other thing is like, I hear so many people call in even today or say to me like, you know, I'm a bad gardener. I have like a, you know, I can't, not a green thumb. And it's, you know, it's not your fault. It's okay. Like try it, try again. My biggest thing is compost and an irrigation system. I don't know if that's possible at a community garden. But irrigation systems are honestly like almost always like what went wrong in the garden. Like you went on vacation, you got busy, we're humans. So I feel like setting yourself up for support and having the structure.
And also more foundationally, if you don't have sun, you can't grow vegetables.
Right.
Pick something
yes.
else. Right. If you don't have sun, you can't grow vegetables.
Exactly.
Pick something else.
And that's all in the book. And I think just like covering those bases and making sure your structure's good, so that you're set up for success, that it's a feel good experience.
You know, let's say someone can't go install like a drip system. You know, one listener on Instagram wants to know about these garden olas, these kind of porous clay pots that get buried in the ground to provide water directly to plant roots. One reason I imagine that person is asking that on Instagram is because you get advertised them all the time on Instagram if you look at any garden stuff.
It's truth.
So do they work? What do we think?
We use them to I would not rely on it to water my garden, but we do use them to supplement fruit trees, just because some people have like you know, water that they are collecting from gray water, like from their kitchen or their shower, and so that can be a cool way to just distribute it slowly and give. I also feel like give the fruit trees as much water as you can responsibly, because then they'll just make more fruit for you and better tasting fruit.
Yeah,
on a small level.
Yeah,
not on the level of an entire garden, but
But like in a garden, in a raised bed. Helpful.
And in a single plant. Mm-hmm. People like using them indoors for their house plants as well.
Let's bring in Brenda in San Francisco. Welcome, Brenda.
Oh, thank you. I'm really enjoying this program. And I just have to quickly add that whenever I go into Flora Grub, I announce that I'm moving in.
Oh, thank you.
We it's all so feel beautiful. That way.
Meanwhile, I have installed a labyrinth in my backyard. It's according to this guy, Alex Champion, who has published a book about meandering paths. So it isn't like Grace Cathedral, but it is a meandering path. And he had a book, he had a workbook that showed you different
creative labyrinths, I think I'm finding, right? Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's called Earth Maze, more like an earth maze, but he would always douse to get the right, you know, positions and stuff. Anyway, I live in Dogpatch, and it's not a big yard, but by using his designs of a meandering path, I have a concrete path in the middle.
Yeah.
But it's just delightful, really.
Yeah, and it kind of like increases the kind of surface area for your eyes or something, right? I mean, you're like, by doing something that's not just like a, here's a patch, here's a patch, here's a rectangle, here's a rectangle, here's a rectangle.
Yeah. One thing I noticed when working on this book was going through all of the Pine House Gardens, a lot of them have a perimeter path that takes you around the edges of the garden. So you're really getting a lot more to experience. You know, they have sometimes a central planting in the middle, but it makes the whole space feel a lot bigger and more expansive. And you have all these layers of experiences while you're moving around.
Yeah. Do you want to say anything else about kind of layout, particularly kind of like center versus periphery? Like that does seem to really be at play here too.
I will say something. your plants do not have to go around the edge of your garden. I feel like somehow along the way, like a lot of people got the memo that like your backyard's like a rectangle of grass and then with like a strip of, for some reason, like 2 foot tall
Leslie,
plants.
I feel attacked.
Oh, yeah. 2 foot tall. There are 2 foot tall plants around the edge of the perimeter and then a fence. And then this is like my personal biggest peeve. And then you walk outdoors and you look at a fence. And I'm like, are we not in a garden? Why am I not looking at plants? So I would strongly advocate for one, bringing some height up around the edge. So you have a backdrop. Mm-hmm. You can still look at some fence if it's a nice looking fence. But getting some height there. And so that's larger shrubs like pittosporums or junipers or whatever, or, you know, pineapple guavas, whatever shrubs you like. And then bringing stuff into the center, you know, bringing tall vertical elements. And a lot of times we use deciduous fruit trees for that. But also those can be vertical, you know, a small magnolia or a beautiful Japanese maple or like, again, whatever brings you joy, but bring it into the center. So you have some sort of dynamic, just like things to look through, vertical interest. I don't know what the right word is, but like make it dynamic, right?
Yeah.
And then as we talked about, like add a path that guides you through and you have all these experiences, immersive experiences along the way.
Yeah.
And you're in your garden.
Pineapple guava is currently the thing that I most want to put in right now. Love those. So it's
such
beautiful
a good one.
Foliage.
Yep.
Couple of fire questions to toss at you here. Stepan writes, we just had a fire hazard inspection in North Berkeley Hills. The upshot is to not have very many plants with space in between and not within a certain distance of structures. Suggestions for gardens and fire zones. Another listener writes, when someone said to use evergreen shrubs, I believe that was you, Leslie, it occurred to me that many of them might be quite flammable, so they probably should not be placed near houses. Is that true? How do you determine which ones are safe and which are not, you know?
Yeah, we literally just designed that garden for that house, and they are in North Berkeley, and it is a very stringent set of regulations, which are kind of crazy. I mean, it's a new world. We were like, wow. And so we did design it. It's a 3-foot setback from the house. Things like thuyas and junipers, which are very flammable, are not allowed. Gravel base. But we made an awesome design, which will eventually be available to drive by and look at in North Berkeley. But we relied a lot on succulents. Succulents hold water, so they're naturally fire deterrent. And then there are plants like, I can't remember actually, but there are certain plants that are actually not, you might not, I don't know why they're not, but like boxwood, I think, is not so flammable. So it's still, you can still use plants, but they are spaced out, you know, 3 feet apart. So it's sort of a new aesthetic of negative space, dramatic pieces, but it doesn't, we were really pleased with what we worked out, and it was not sort of like this, I think you see it a
not
lot of
austere.
East Bay. Not this like utilitarian, like sad, like horribleness. Like there is a new aesthetic that can be achieved. And it almost doesn't, I think that's like the future. It's something that we're really interested in at Pine House is like, what is the low water fire deterrent or landscape that is still beautiful and isn't just speaking to utility?
Yeah.
And it exists. And like, I think we all have to like put our design minds toward it.
Flora, I think this is a good one for you, and especially given our caller, Brenda, who was like, I want to move into Flora Grub. A listener writes, many Bay Area residents are eliminating, you know, lovely gardens because they're choosing to cover their yards with an accessory dwelling unit, expand their home office. This listener is asking, can you say anything about creating a garden office instead, which I kind of love that. But also, what about like kind of, have you seen interesting ways of integrating the ADUs that are rolling out across the Bay Area into the garden, you know? Is it, I guess, here's where I'm going with this. I kind of love that Spanish-style courtyard, or, I mean, there's many other cultures that have this kind of courtyard kind of garden. But what are the kind of things people need to be aware of if they're going to essentially create a courtyard out of their backyard?
To Leslie's point about not having little foot-high flowers or around some grass, the aim is going to be trees and large shrubs, which can get their heads up and out of your way so that you have paths beneath, or you have you've got to create a path to your ADU and it's taking up space. But large plants are going to be the way to still have plants, because if you're trying to plant things down in the shadows of everything, it's not going to thrive. So how do you get plants that are kind of like up around the level of the eye line and above, or put the ceiling on the garden?
Yeah.
And then people want to do that without blocking too much sun. So these are design conundrums, but it can absolutely be done. But looking to larger plants, mm-hmm. They don't have to be larger when you start necessarily, but looking to plants that are going to get up there above your eye level is the way to put that ceiling or those layers up on your garden. That's that will cool. work in those kinds of backyards.
Right on point here, Paige writes in to say, I built an accessory dwelling unit, moved into it 4.5 years ago. The garden we designed to include shelter for birds, a fountain bird bath, galvanized tubs for berries and herbs, a small citrus orchard to provide beautiful views outside every window. I think a lot of folks miss the opportunity to create something beautiful to view from inside the house.
Yes.
Even a narrow space can support plants like creeping fig, which will cover fences. In a year or two, we live in a wonderful climate, thrilled to enjoy the outdoor spaces as much as the indoor spaces. Yeah. I mean, one of the things I loved is just the kind of the sense of wholeness and integration that person brought to it. You know, and I think there's an amazing garden in your book, Leslie, that has this incredibly large kind of stone entryway, because the couple likes to have people over. And so they wanted like a really wide path coming in. I thought even, you know, that kind of thought and attention to detail of sort of like, well, what is going on inside the house and what's going on outside the house?
Yeah. I mean, I think really working with scale, I think, like a really narrow space that has plants, and then you go through that and you open up into something larger.
Mm.
Choosing plants that you say can train for like a really evocative drape over an entrance. I mean, there are so many ways to, you know, work with what you have to make a space have a feeling. Like, so much of the time what my team and I are going for is a feeling. Like, you just want to feel something as you walk in,
and that
takes some intention. I'm not sure if that was entirely answering.
Yeah, I would also say that when you're creating your garden, go inside and look out and see the spaces, you know, see where the views are, because a lot of times you are in your house. I mean, the idea, you know, with the book is we're trying to get you out and actually in your garden all the time. But, you know, in the colder months or when it's raining, you're inside. And what are you looking at? And create for that as well.
Yeah.
That points to a lot of the issues that you deal with in these tight urban environments too, which is, well, when I look out my window, what I see is my neighbor's windows.
Right.
And so what you want to do is get those bigger plants up in between you and your neighbor's windows so that you both get to look at a tree instead of each other.
I think that's really important. And you know, to what Flora said, planting tall shrubs and tall trees, the ADU needs a garden too.
Yeah.
You know, so between whatever the original houses and the ADU, create gardens that are viewable from both sides.
I love that. Okay, here's another question. A listener writes, I'm tired of weeding and mowing, and I'm thinking of doing the front yard with a weed barrier and gravel, then potted plants on top of that. Are there any good reasons I should do a designed yard with in-ground planting instead?
Yes.
And you'll never stop weeding.
Yes,
that's not a thing. You have to. Someone's going to weed your garden if it's not you. But that landscape fabric with gravel will keep you from weeding for a single season.
Yes.
And then you will begin weeding again.
Correct. And it'll start sticking up and looking really horrible.
That's all true.
And it's made out of toxic plastics and terribleness. Yeah, a big hard no to all of that, just to be blunt. But also the plant, like, so landscape cloth aside, which I do have a particular passionate dislike for, mostly because it looks so bad after a year and then you have to rip it out. But the plants and pots, I see that so much by people who are trying to make their life easier, but it actually makes your life harder.
Or like portable. I think sometimes people do it because they're like, I want to move this.
Yeah, portable. Then I completely understand. And then I think it's, then that makes sense. But if you're just living there and you want it to be easier, it's actually so much easier to put your plant in the ground, because then they have access to the natural soil, to the subsoil, all the minerals and nutrients, the water holds. Like, your plants are so much happier and healthier. I think so many people who struggle with plants, they put it in a pot The soil's depleted in 3 weeks. It dries out in 10 minutes. Their plant's dead. And they're like, I'm a bad gardener. Yeah. And I'm like, go with Mother Earth. She's right there waiting for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And to the point about, you know, as you were saying earlier, Alexis, about having a garden in a space where when you're renting, the idea that you should then put little plants in a pot rather than just buying a big plant, a plant which is going to be big someday, and putting it in the ground so that you get a big plant. And it costs $30 that you leave behind when you move out of the out of the area. You have something in the meanwhile.
Yeah, totally.
I totally agree. Yeah.
We have been talking about garden wonderlands, how to create life-changing outdoor spaces for beauty, harvest, meaning, and joy. Thank you so much for all of your calls and comments. We've been joined by the co-authors of this book, Leslie Bennett and Julie Chai. Thank you so much for joining us, Julie.
Thank you for having us.
And thank you, Leslie.
Thank you. This was so fun.
We've also been joined by Flora Grubb, co-owner of Flora Grubb Gardens in San Francisco and Los Angeles. Thanks, Flora.
Thank you so much. It was so fun.
I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for another hour of Forum Ahead with Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of KQED's Forum are provided by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Heising Simons Foundation.
Support for Forum comes from San Francisco Opera. Set 10 years after a school shooting, the critically acclaimed opera Innocence takes us into a complex emotional journey where our understanding of innocence and guilt is constantly upended. Kaija Saariaho's ethereal score collapses the past into the present as a community of survivors grapple with how to move forward. Don't miss the highly anticipated American premiere of Innocence, June 1st through 21st. Learn more at sfopera.com.
We've all got those parts of our house where the internet just won't go. Well, if you had wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you could worry less about dead spots. Because with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity, you get fast speeds, reliable connection in every room, and power for all of your devices, even when everyone's online. That's wall-to-wall Wi-Fi, only with Xfinity. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.